Hey, sit down listeners. You can find us every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to The Sit Down, a Mafia History podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a Mafia History podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau, back and better than never. I hope you're having a great week wherever you are. We are pushing to the end of August here. How quickly time flies. And how quickly season one of this show is about to come to an end. As many of you know, I know you listened to last week's episode. I kind of told everybody we're going to take some time off from the show. And I know people are sad and everything. But again, don't fret. We'll be back. It's not going to be forever. I just need to take some time to kind of rebrand and do some things. And we'll come back and we'll keep everyone kind of up to date as to what's going on. But today we have a great episode planned for you. We're going to involve you, the listener, a little bit, do a little Q&A. People like the Mafia Q&A. And then we're going to get into a very interesting biography. We're going to talk about a guy called Alphonse Malagone, Ali Shades, a guy that nobody talks about, is really one of the more powerful people in really the heyday of the Genovese crime family, a guy that at one point conspired with John Gotti to kill Vincent Gigante, allegedly. We're going to talk about all that and more. And we have a surprise for the show. I felt it was important to bring him back. People ask me about all the time, what happened to Blackjack Fletcher? Well, he's back. Blackjack, good to have you back. How you doing, bro?
What's up, brother? It's good to be here, man. Good to be here. I'm glad that I could be here for the finale of season one of this episode. I can't wait to see what else you got in store coming, but I'm excited to be here for this one.
Yeah, you were involved, Blackjack, in really most of the integral episodes of this show. And, I got to admit, I mean, miss you. I mean, I definitely miss having you on the show. I know you're very busy. You got a lot going on. People don't really remember. Like, we have regular, like, not lives, but like, we have other things we do outside of mob content. So, it becomes tough. It becomes difficult. You're running kind of a company in a way. You're traveling a lot. And, it's tough sometimes. And look, as I said last week, it's a lot of work this show takes up. You know, I put in a lot of time to make these shows, high level. They're not just shit you hear all the time. And, I have a YouTube channel and I'm just putting out so much content. It's time for a break. But you were here during the heyday for the most of this show.
Yeah, man. I listen. I've always loved doing this show with you. It's a great forum and conduit to kind of expose people to what I think are some of the most fascinating creatures in the American underworld. So it's always been great for me to do, and I'm happy I could be here tonight.
And as I said last week, like, I think a lot of people think, like, I'm going to come back. We're going to come back and we're going to do. It's not like you're never going to hear from Blackjack again. We'll do shows, I'm sure. I'm just really going to branch more into other underworld figures as well.
I'm excited about that, man. Like, I think, when you told me that that's kind of where you were taking the show, it's going to be so much fun, because I think what you've done with the Mafia in talking about guys like who we're talking about tonight, Ali Shades, is a guy who a lot of people have never heard of, who is a fascinating figure. Now you're going to be able to do that, not just for Mafia figures, but for the general criminal world. And I think it's going to be really great.
Yeah, and I think, it's important to obviously, kind of bring awareness as to A, what's going on around the world, B, the men and women that have shaped criminality around the world, from terrorists to serial killers to drug dealers to, cartel bosses. Like, there's all sorts of people. And look, I think one thing when we hear like the word serial killer, we think, oh, it's going to be the same, the Jeffrey Dahmers and the John Wayne Gacy's. No, I'm actually going to look more into people that are infamous, maybe not even in this country. You may not have ever even heard of these people. Yep. So I've always enjoyed kind of looking in deeper into crime. And look, on this show, we've talked about John Gotti and Vincent Gigante and Al Capone. But, you know, I'm proud of the fact that, you know, not only on this show, but on YouTube, I try to look into, you know, people maybe we don't necessarily know as much about. We've done, you know, the Neil Migliores or the Tony Ducks or the Ali Shades or the, you know, whoever's, you know, we have interviews that no one really has had. Nobody's interviewed Jack Garcia. Nobody's interviewed John Gleason. Like, nobody's done that sort of thing. So we're going to kind of bring the show back, make it better than ever, and really just try to grow it to kind of that infamous level where it's not just gangsters and it's more. But Blackjack, how's everything with you been? I know you're always busy.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I just got back early this morning from Canada. Up there for the Queen's Plate up at Woodbine, it's the Canadian version of the Kentucky Derby. Yep. Was up there with Better Than Vegas and Jonathan Papelbon, who I have a podcast with now, Blackjack and Pap. Go check it out, download it. Great time, you know, but like you said, just flying around a lot, man. Getting around a lot as best I can if the flights aren't delayed or canceled, which they are everywhere.
No, I know. It's a mess. I've noticed, I mean, even just with pricing and everything, it's crazy as far as getting a flight and it being on time, and it's just a mess. But yeah, go check out Blackjack's podcast with Jonathan Papelbon, one of the great closers over the last 20 years. Also, make sure you follow Blackjack on Twitter at Blackjack Fletch. He's got a lot of gambling things going on, doing his thing down there in sunny Florida. All right, Blackjack, let's answer some questions from our listeners. We haven't done this in a while. In fact, I haven't done this in a while. Before we do that, though, I urge you, stay up to date with the show. Okay, this is going to be very important after today. People have asked me, how long are you going to be off? Listen, I'm going to probably cap it at a month. We'll see. I have some things with the sports world I have to kind of get under control and kind of rebrand. So I'll keep you guys up to date. I'm still going to be tweeting out some old shows, you know, some of our YouTube content I'm going to try to keep doing, which is a little easier. So make sure you follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down Seven, at the Sit Down Seven. You can also email me if you need me, the Sit Down 777 at gmail.com. And also make sure you go follow us and subscribe on YouTube. I am up close to 23,000 subs. My videos are flying. We really have some videos I'm proud of on there, several over 100,000 views. Some pushing 200,000. Very proud of what we've done on YouTube in such a short amount of time. So go check that out. I put videos out usually Tuesdays, you know, Saturdays, that sort of thing. So let's jump into Q&A, Blackjack. This is fun. Let's chat with some people here. First question. Chris Dramerson, what do you have planned for your upcoming new season? I definitely missed the weekly episodes, but I know how hard you've been working, putting out content. It's a well-deserved break for sure. I'll be waiting for your return. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Krista. You're very kind. You know, really just kind of talked about that, but I'll just kind of build a little bit on it. I'm really going to delve into, like I said, things that maybe you've heard of, maybe, you know, guys like Victor Boot, who people know who he is, but they don't necessarily know much about him. I'm going to talk about everything from drug dealers to terrorists to cartel bosses to some of the really infamous people this world has ever seen. You know, I'm going to talk about gore videos, people that have filmed their crimes, which I think is a fascinating way of committing crime. I'm going to talk about cannibals. I'm going to talk about people that have, you know, really kind of are some of the most brutal people ever seen on this planet. So that's kind of what we're going to do. We'll still do plenty of mob stuff, but there's more to true crime than just mob stuff. But we're also not going to do Blackjack, the typical pick a case about a co-ed that's killed and we find out who did it. We're not going to do that sort of thing. Not that I don't like that kind of thing. I'll be honest. I don't really like that kind of thing. It's not really my thing. And there are plenty of true crime shows that do that. This show is really just going to be more of an infamous criminal type of show.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the interesting part, right? Is kind of shining a light on things that either you're unfamiliar with or giving you a different perspective on something that you didn't know before. And I think that's what you do best. So
absolutely.
I'm excited.
Absolutely. Brad Porter, have you ever looked in the history of the major players in the old Kansas City Mafia? Several interesting stories, a lot of Vegas casino money thrown through KC. Absolutely, it did. And if you've ever seen Casino, we know that. Have I ever looked into the history? Absolutely. I mean, I recently did a video on YouTube. We did a show about a month ago involved with kind of the current mafia in America and what it looks like. And today, Kansas City is more defunct. There's a couple of old guys left, but it's way far away from where it once was, where people like Nick Civella and Willie the Rat Camisano ran Kansas City. Are there still people that are running gambling halls and things like that? I'm sure there are. But yeah, there's a sordid, very interesting history of Kansas City. And, you know, it's really the conduit between Chicago and Las Vegas. The film Casino is very true. I mean, as far as, you know, different people were involved with getting the skim and handling the skim. And there were people that flew back and forth. And yeah, Kansas City was kind of the meeting point for all that stuff. So yeah, I'm sure at some point we'll do a show on Nick Civella and of Kansas City. But Blackjack, I mean, you've been out to Vegas many times. I mean, if you've ever looked into anything that ever happened between, you know, the Chicago outfit, it was done a lot of the time through Kansas City. So Blackjack, you've seen Casino, obviously.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, a bunch of times. And I mean, listen, obviously New York is kind of the mecca when it comes to talking about the mafia, but for me, Vegas is probably my second most interesting city with the mafia, because like you said, it involves guys in Kansas City, in Chicago, in Cleveland, and all of it kind of funneled into Vegas. So, you know, I think the Vegas mob history is a fascinating one.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, even people like, you know, Benny Binion, people of that nature.
Yeah.
It's definitely a fascinating place. And again, it has tentacles. Las Vegas was really the New York of the West. I mean, as far as, you know, all sorts of cities were kind of repped there. You know, you saw someone like, you know, Mickey Cohen or Bugsy Siegel or any of those people who were out on the West Coast. Definitely very interesting. Gary Jenkins does a great podcast about Kansas City. Does other mob stuff too, but Gary used to be a police officer in Kansas City and he's got a lot of experience. So the person that asked that question, I don't know if you're familiar with that show, but I'd highly recommend it. Absolutely. Jersey Girl 713, a very devout listener. She says, if you could have a sit down with any mafia figure living or dead, who would it be and why? That's a great question. I think we've had derivatives of this question, but if I could sit down with any mafia figure living or dead, I would probably go with someone living, and I would go with Barney Bellomo. I mean, I've always, you know, I'm always fascinated by Barney. I mean, he's been able to operate really in the shadows in a world where it is so hard to not be photographed, not to be out there. And he's managed for really a long time outside of a several years in prison to really go from being a guy that was a prodigy and he was made at like 20 and ultimately became Chin's fill-in as the new boss of the family. And to this day is, you know, according to the government, still in control of the most powerful mafia family in the country. So, I mean, obviously we're grasping at straws here, but Blackjack, it's hard to find a guy today that there's only like four or five photos of. And that's pretty incredible. I think he's a really fascinating person and I'd probably love to speak to him. What about you? You have anybody in mind?
I mean, the living answer is a tough one for me because I want to say Sammy Gravano if he was like injected with truth serum, but everything he says is bullshit. So there's really no point in that. As far as anyone living or dead, I think my answer would be Carlo Gambino, because if you think about Carlo and when he came up, you know, with Albert Anastasia and that hit and taking control at the age he did and then stewarding that family through everything that it went through and really becoming, I mean, we've talked about it how many times on this show, essentially a Fortune 500 company. And then on the tail end, you know, dealing with the rise of John Gotti and Paul Castellano and all that. I think Carlo Gambino would have a world of insight that few people ever have.
Yeah, that's a great one. Obviously coming over from Italy and becoming kind of what he became. That's a great one. Black Cat 997. I would love to see an episode on the next season about the Japanese Yakuza. It seems like their downfall took place at a similar time to LCN, probably due to similar reasons. Look, that would be so, you know, again, I've talked about this with cartel groups. Like, I think it's possible with cartel groups just because they're more or less regional as opposed to like they're the Yakuza, which is like a huge, like transnational organization. Not that cartels aren't, but you know, at any rate, at this point, like the Yakuza now is more of like, I'm not going to say a Fortune 500 company, but you know, at one point at its peak, I think it had like 250,000 members. I mean, it was a gigantic organization. I don't know if there's like a particular person that honestly was like the leader of it. It's just a, it would be a very difficult thing to undertake. Yeah, all those large syndicates, whether it's, you know, someone in China or you know, some sort of organization like that, it's very difficult. But from what I know now about the Yakuza, they're very sorted. There's all sorts of different groups of them and things of that nature. But I can't say I know a ton about them, quite honestly. What are your top five mafia movies? I feel like, I don't know if we've ever truly gotten this question. I feel like we've gotten what movies do you like, but I don't think ever top five. Top five for me would be A Bronx Tale, Gotti, the HBO version, Donnie Brasco, Casino, and probably, look, I love The Irishman. I know a lot of people don't. I thought it truly encapsulated what it's like to be in the mafia, and I think it truly kind of showed what it's like to be in the mafia now, and the decisions that you make will approach your life and hurt your life forever, and in the end people just forget about you. I've always said that was why I started this show. It feels like we've forgotten about the mafia. They're not a organization people are scared of anymore. They're almost kind of looked at in a weird way now, and you know, I wanted to kind of bring back the thought of like the thought of those guys that of yesteryear, the old New York, what they used to be. And I thought The Irishman did a great job. That Blackjack, what about you? Do you have any films that I didn't mention that you like?
I mean, listen, my number one is obviously the same as yours. It's the Gotti movie by HBO. It's the best, I think, far and away mob movie that's ever been made. I would have Casino second. I'm going to put Goodfellas third just because I know there's flaws with it, but it's just such an iconic movie at this point. Sure. Like, if I'm flipping through the channels and I see Goodfellas, I'm going to stop and finish it. A Bronx Tale's definitely there, and The Godfather. I mean, another iconic piece of cinema that you know is it's just a piece of American culture at this point.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Blackjack, that this question came up because I've told you, and I don't want to tell anybody about what I told you because we've talked about this, but I have possibly an idea coming up that will
about
this type of question. It'll be involving film, so. I have something that I'm working on. It's still kind of in the growing stages with someone else right now, but it is something that I have an eye on and I'm thinking about. But Jerry, I did want to tell you one thing. I actually had a long conversation the other day with Kevin Connolly, who was the director of the second Gotti film, the one that came out with Travolta. And I'm working on an interview with him, and I really want him to come on because he has a podcast now. He actually did an episode about his experience filming the new film. And, you know, I always felt bad for Kevin. I think he's a great actor. I thought he was great in Entourage and he's been in some really awesome things, but I thought he got a bad rap with Gotti. And he actually talked about that in his new podcast. And I want to get him on the show to talk about that because I think that could have been a great film, but it just wasn't ran correctly and just kind of was messy. But I think there are too many Gotti films. That's the problem. The original was the best.
100%.
All right. Gavin Cook, the CIA has approached you to form a crew to extract intelligence from a clandestine terrorist group in the Middle East. Your agents have to go into deep cover, so no need to blend in. Picking on your feet and keep your mouth shut. What OC guys are in your crew?
That's a tricky question.
Yeah, though. I mean, because first of all, none of the people that we talk about would probably resemble, you know, Islamic terrorists, quite honestly.
No, I think you have to throw that part of this question out, honestly, because it's impossible to answer with that caveat.
Yeah, so obviously we need someone that can quickly, covertly do things. So again, pretty much anyone in the 80s and beyond, I'm probably not interested in.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say, I mean, Chin Gigante probably would be one. I think Chin was incredibly smart, covert. He knew how to kind of, I mean, didn't he blend in? He looked like kind of a normal person. We just thought he was some blithering idiot on the street, right? I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
Wasn't one of these like ostentatious gangsters, you know?
No, my answer would be Tommy Patera.
Yeah, I think he would do well. I mean, obviously.
I like the martial arts aspect of it. You know what I mean? I feel like he could quietly kick some ass if he had to.
Yeah,
also,
no.
Probably if we need to extract information, I feel like Tommy Patera's got some torture up his sleeve.
Right, and he was also particularly strong at dismembering people, which is something that ISIS and other groups do very well. Joe Watts, I think, would be very good as well. Yeah. And Joe Watts is someone that I think could kind of talk to anybody. He has that kind of brazenness. He has that torture ability as well. Roy DeMeo. I mean, anybody really that did that sort of thing, I think, would blend in very well to that world. I've said this before, though, and I'll say it again. I don't truly believe that anyone in the history of the mob, really outside of one or two people, was a true psychopath to the point of, like, they enjoyed killing people and, like, cutting people up. Like, I don't truly think Tommy – I've said this before. I don't think Tommy Patera truly enjoyed doing that. I think he looked at it as a job, and that was his thing. I mean, I look at cartel people like that. That is their job. Their job is to kill people. They don't look at it as – I think some of them probably enjoy it. But, you know, I'm trying to think of truly, like, heinous people in the mafia as far as that would do stuff like that. As far as – I don't think the CIA would ever – bring in people like us to do that sort of thing. But yeah, I would just probably go with any of the normal lunatics that we know of.
Yeah.
But a wild question nonetheless, Gavin. I feel like you have some very interesting thoughts going through your head at certain points. Art Vandelay, I read an amazing book about the mafia and the garbage industry called Takedown. Yes, actually, I will reference that book today in our discussion. Amazing book and incredible insight on how much money the mob made in the waste industry. Absolutely. And it really is undervalued. And I'm going to talk about that in this biography today. I mean, people like Ali Shades, Jimmy Failla, I mean, these people made tens of millions of dollars for decades in controlling trash. I mean, we don't quite think about it, Blackjack, but think about it. At one point in the early 90s, there were 200,000 people that used New York City trash hauling. I mean, think about how many people are involved with that, how many businesses are involved, how much waste needs to be moved. I mean, that's hundreds of millions of dollars per year that you can affect. So, yeah, I mean, it's something that we don't talk about enough. You know, we always talk about the more flashy stuff. Trash isn't necessarily flashy, but yeah, waste hauling is incredibly big money.
Facebook is building tools to enhance safety and security. Over 40 million people are using Facebook's privacy checkup each month. That's nearly 60 times the population of Washington, D.C. Learn more about the work ahead at facebook.com/action.
This isn't a question, but I wanted to mention her. Deborah McElroy says, I'm going to miss my Wednesday morning fix of the show. You are the best. Thank you, Deborah. You're one of our most loyal listeners. You've been very kind, and we're not going anywhere forever. We'll be back soon. The guy Caesar, have you ever seen the movie Boss of Bosses about Paul Castellano? And if so, what are your thoughts? It's free on YouTube. No, I have not seen that. I believe that is with Chaz Palminteri. Have you seen that?
I have.
You have?
I have, yeah.
What did you think of it? You'll have to answer this question. I have not seen it.
I mean, the reason I remember is because, again, it's got so many familiar faces in it. I didn't love the movie. It just kind of felt, number one, it didn't feel entirely accurate, and it felt like a bad TV movie, which I think it actually might have been. So, you know, production wise, it wasn't great. But I'm going to say it wasn't Chaz Palminteri's best work.
No, listen, I'm a big fan of Chaz. I think you know, he has his great roles. He has his roles for sure. That, you know, maybe I'm just not as interested in. And look, I got to be honest. I'm just so tired of these same stories. I mean, this is also goes back to why I'm wanting to do more. I'm so tired of having the, what do you think of Sammy Gravano's channel? Like, I've seen it all. I've heard it all.
I'll say it. I hate it.
Yeah. We've heard all these stories. Like, I've seen, how many times do I need to have the fucking Spark Steakhouse assassination told back to me? Like, I've heard about it. And not for nothing, I'm looking at this cast list. I mean, okay, I'm looking at Neil De La Croce, who's played by a guy called Dayton Callie. Do you know who Dayton Callie is offhand?
I know his face.
Dayton Callie was, do you remember did you see Sons of Anarchy?
Yes.
He was he was the cop, the old guy, Wayne Unser. He was like the police chief that worked for Sam Crow. You know who I'm talking about?
Yep.
Like, I don't know. I just can't see him playing Neil De La Croce. I'm just being
tough, but that's what I'm saying. The best way I can describe it is it's a bad made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like that goofy Witness to the Mob film, which
I hated
that movie. So yeah, I'm sure Chaz is great, but it's just not a movie that I just really care much about. But I don't know, maybe someday I'll watch it. The Ball is Orange says, how does Johnny Roselli rate among all-time gangsters? Maybe give him a star rating like a football recruit. Well, listen, Johnny Roselli is a very interesting individual. I mean, he was a guy that when we talk about Las Vegas, he was integral to kind of that playing out. He was a guy that many people believe was recruited to put in motion the Fidel Castro hit by the CIA. You know, he was involved with Hollywood. He's one of those really interesting people. Was he integral in the mafia's development? Yeah, I think absolutely. I think when we look back to really all the conspiracies that we've heard about JFK and Fidel and, mm-hmm. and all these different people, you know, Johnny Roselli was integral in a lot of that stuff. He was very connected politically. You know, at one point he was called to testify about the Kennedy assassination. If you've heard about the disappearance of Roselli, I mean, a lot of that reverts back to Kennedy. I think there was a lot of connection there. And if you've ever heard about JFK, you've heard this name before. He's definitely an interesting guy, surely. As far as rating him, I would say he's a B+, A minus. I think he's a very important part of organized crime history and a guy that I don't know if the mob would be the same without him. But yes, very interesting person. Started out as a bootlegger, just very interesting. Do you know anything about Johnny Roselli at Blackjack?
Yeah, I mean, I like you said, the biggest thing that I know about him is that, you know, the CIA wanted him to kill Castro. But, you know, an interesting guy for sure. And I had a lot of control out west, you know, in Los Angeles and Las Vegas. I think B+ is right. I think that's about where he fits.
Yeah, I mean, he's not your boss. I mean, he's not your Gambino or Tony Accardo, but I think he's very integral. And look, when it comes to, like, these mysterious mob guys that you kind of know something about but kind of don't, I mean, he's definitely one of them. I mean, surely. I mean, you put him in that Sam Giancana realm. Just a very interesting individual, very much involved with conspiracy theories. And then, you know, when his body was found in 76, that was definitely interesting as well. So, yeah, definitely a very interesting individual. David McKenna, enjoy your time off. You've earned it. Don't be away too long. Can't go too long without an episode. We won't be. We'll definitely keep up to date as to what's going on. Jerry X also says, you've done a great job with the show and YouTube. I thoroughly enjoyed both. I'm not living under a rock anymore. Subscribe to them. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Michael Yeaney, whatever happened to the Westies episode? Yeah, you know, I've gotten this question a couple times. You know, honestly, I had a guest planned, and then I ended up doing, I think I was going to do, I think that stuff with the Baltimore organized or the Gun Trace Task Force came out, so I ended up doing a video, and my guest ended up not coming on, and we never got around to it, but we'll definitely do it. I mean, we talk about truly, like, disturbing people. Jimmy Coonan was definitely a disturbing person. I mean, as far as, you know, a guy that would cut someone's head off for sure. So I'm sure we'll talk about James Coonan at some point. Absolutely. Other than John Favara, are there any known instances of the mafia targeting and killing a non-law enforcement and non-connected everyday citizen? Oh, absolutely. I mean, Blackjack, I could go on for, I mean, I've done two different videos on YouTube about this, and I can just name a few. I mean, Nicky Guido, he was killed because of the mafia cops. They got the wrong Nicky Guido, and he was killed. Roy DeMeo killed an individual called Dominic Ragucci by accident. He thought it was a Cuban hitman, and he ended up just being a vacuum cleaner salesman. You know, Alan Kaiser was killed by Sammy Gravano. Alan Kaiser was a teenager. He was killed by Sammy Gravano. Gravano thought he was a hitman as well. Yeah, all sorts of innocent people have been killed by the mafia. Two individuals were killed by gunmen that Anthony Casso asked. They were involved in waste. They were killed out in Long Island, Ronald Kubeka and Donald Barstow. There was a girl in Italy, Gelsomina Verde. She was tortured by the Camorra for giving up her boyfriend. Yeah, a lot of people have been involved with hits that were not involved with the mafia. To say that is true is a complete farce. The mafia's killed a lot of people they shouldn't. Sure. And then what I'll do is optimistic Vols fan, I'll send you some of the videos I've done on that subject. But yeah, sadly, Blackjack, a lot of people have been killed by the mob that weren't related to it.
Yeah, it definitely happens. I mean, you know, I don't think that it's a number one target of their business, but it certainly happens.
100%. Final question. This was actually DM'd to me, and I got to be honest, I'm blown away. I've never received this question, and I actually gave this individual, David, that sent it some credit, Blackjack. This is a question that I've never been asked, and I'm blown away by it. He basically asked me, who is the most disturbing person you've ever covered or looked into? Okay, and all the reading you've ever done, not just mafia, just in general, like who is the most kind of just awful person you've ever come in contact with? And I immediately thought of one person, and I will do a show on him at some point. I think when you look back, I think you could probably attribute, he probably killed 500-ish people himself probably. And he is someone that if you are aware of the cartel world, you know who he is. There's a guy, Miguel Trevino Morales. He's a guy that, if you've ever heard of him, you know who I'm talking about. This is a guy that was just a disturbing, dangerous, violent, resentful lunatic. He is just a sick fuck. I mean, he killed babies. I mean, he ordered hundreds of people killed innocently. Just an awful, awful person. I'd urge you to do some research and look into him. We'll do a show on him at some point. He was part of cartel Los Zetas. And if you know anything about them, they were incredibly dangerous. Blackjack, do you have anybody?
I mean, the name that immediately jumps to mind, Jeff, is Cabani Savage. That I remember when you and I did that episode, we literally ended it and we're like, well, shit, what do we do now? Because like, that just didn't feel right. Like it was unpleasant to talk about. And we've talked about some people who've done some really fucked up shit. Cabani Savage is like the stuff of nightmares.
No, and he's one that I think in this country I would put up there. I've said before he is the most dangerous person in the history of this state. I don't think it's close. I mean, he was a really awful human being. And if you haven't heard that episode, go back and check it out. But I mean, like this guy Morales, like I've heard stories, Blackjack, that at one point he would just drive around, Tamaulipas in Mexico and just order his underlings just shoot people on site. No reason given. He would talk about the fact that he couldn't sleep at night if he didn't kill someone that day. I mean, he was a very disturbed lunatic. I mean, a psychopath. He belongs in prison for the rest of his life. And these are the kind of people. Look, I've said it before. The drug cartels in Mexico are the most violent people on earth. Okay, no one's more violent.
You're not wrong. They are. You're right.
But yeah, Cabani is a soulless person. I mean, I'll tell you one thing, and I've said this before. I know you won't agree with me. I would love to speak to him. I would love to get into his brain and understand
that dude. I mean, literally, of all the shows I've done with you, and there's a lot of them, that dude is the kind of guy that, like, you listen to that episode and you want to lock your doors. I mean, it's just terrifying.
Yeah, I'm always blown away that, like, he like, just, I mean, it wasn't long ago either. Like, he was, like, around, you know, within the last 20 years. You know, and then there's other people. I mean, I've looked into, like, serial killers. I mean, certain, you know, some of these viral videos. Like, that guy, have you ever seen that Don't Fuck With Cats documentary?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Luca, like, Luca, that guy.
Yeah.
He was a pretty, like, big lunatic. I mean, the
pretty
things
fucked up, dude. But I mean, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of those people. Cabani Savage, just that dude's burned into my brain.
Yeah, and I look, a lot of people say, "What about like Hitler and stuff?" I'm not necessarily talking about like people that to that level. Obviously, they're the worst. But like, I'm talking about like isolated criminals.
Listen, Hitler, obviously an awful human being. I don't know if Hitler on a personal level could do the things that Cabani Savage did. Like that takes a level of depravity to do the things that he did on a personal level. That is just, I can't get my head around.
I agree. All right. Good questions as always. Thank you for sending them in. I'm sure at some point we'll get back into a Q&A, maybe down the road when we come back, but let's delve into Alphonse Malangone. Malangone again, these are the kind of guys that, you know, we hear about the Vinny Gigantes and the Tony Salernos, but the Genovese crime family would not have been and became what it has become without Alphonse Malangone. I mean, Ali Shades was a gigantic earner, a guy that, you know, really just had all the right connections, knew pretty much everybody, and is really a Genovese crime family legend. Not necessarily an enforcer. This guy was an earner, but he had a crew. He was very powerful and had a lot of connections. So let's get into it. Ali Shades Malangone on the sit down. Alphonse Malangone was born September 2nd, 1936 in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. He would run the streets of Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst, and he ultimately, during his youth and into his teenage years, would get a job at the Fulton Fish Market, which at one point, you know, we know what the Fulton Fish Market is. It was basically down in lower Manhattan, and, you know, it was at one point very much run by the mafia. You know, whether it was, and that had gone back since really the 20s, I feel like. The Fulton Fish Market had always been controlled by the mafia. He would begin working with two individuals called Carmine and Vincent Romano, who were very connected in the Fulton Fish Market. They basically controlled the entire operation. He would soon go to work and basically own his own company that ran outside and inside the Fulton Fish Market. He would become kind of an individual that would make all sorts of money. And this is where kind of his criminal career would begin into the early 60s. Hypothetically, what he was really doing was just taking payments from vendors and trucking companies and allowed to operate there. So he was kind of just extorting companies and doing his own thing. He would ultimately, as I said, own his own fish company as well that would work inside of the Fulton Fish Market. So Blackjack, we don't talk about much the Fulton Fish Market, but think of it just like a market in a way where there's all these different vendors and they sell different things that pertain to fish. And, you know, he was going to every little stand and charging a vig to work there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with New York, if you're familiar with the Pike Place Market in Seattle or DC's got a big fish market too, you know, like you said, you described it right. It's you know, a big open place with a bunch of different vendors. And what I'll say about this too, Jeff, is this is kind of an interesting entree into the world of organized crime. It's a little bit higher level than some of the stuff we've seen. Like a lot of guys kind of start running numbers or, you know, doing stuff like that. This is a little bit, it feels a little more sophisticated to me.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I mean, Ali Shades was very adept at just making money in general. Yeah. He did all the other things as well. He was very involved with loan sharking, gambling. And at one point, it was actually identified. There was a report from the Southern District of New York against the International Brotherhood of Teamsters where they looked into Alphonse Malangone, and he was very much involved in all different sorts of mob crimes. It wasn't just one. The guy just knew how to make money. He Yep. knew the right people, and he was able to make the right connections. He would also be inducted into the Genovese crime family in the late 70s. There isn't an exact date on that, but he would kind of move around. He came up in the crew of Mickey Domino Generoso. Now, Generoso is another guy nobody talks about. But this is a guy that, when we look at the Genovese crime family, this is a guy that went back to the Lucky Luciano days. He was made under Lucky Luciano. Mickey Domino would, I think, die at 97. He would be involved with Barney Belomo down the road and was an underboss really in the 90s, a very powerful person. And he would kind of grow up Malangone in a way. He would become a fixture at Ali Shades around Bensonhurst. He was making a lot of money doing a lot of different things. And he knew people. He knew Anthony Spiro, the Bonanno family. He was very close with John Gotti. At one point, it was said by an underling that Ali Shades was, quote, always up John's ass. And he was a brown noser when it came to Gotti. He knew that Gotti, you know, maybe was a little different than he was, but he knew that Gotti was powerful and he was the right person to know. He operated a club, Ali Shades, out of Bay Ridge called Pastels. It was a discotheque, a place a lot of mobsters went, and it would ultimately be a place that, you know, many people would be seen at. I know many Junior Gotti talked about it. A lot of those young guys talked about going into Pastels. By the late 80s, Ali Shades would be named capo of the old crew of Tommy Contaldo. Contaldo would actually die in 1989, and Ali Shades would take over his crew. Contaldo was also very integral in the growing up of Ali Shades. But Blackjack, you know, this is a guy that, you know, we've talked about. He wasn't necessarily, as you said, that normal kind of beat people up and rob people. This guy was making money in the Fulton Fish Market, had things everywhere. He was connected. And you even look at some of the connections he had in different unions. I mean, he was very connected with the IBT, as I said, the International Brother of the Teamsters. He was very close with an individual called Dominic Francillo, who was very involved with the IRB. So connections everywhere abound for this guy.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what you've just described some things that are important. Like he had a little bit more of a sophisticated entree into this world, a lot of connections. And you talk about him being kind of up Gotti's ass. I mean, listen, I think that a lot of people who were sophisticated in that world could recognize John Gotti as a guy who was on the come up. And if you've got all these business connections and you see this guy as a guy who maybe is kind of someone who is going places, not the worst connection to make.
Not at all. Now, one of the big money makers that Ali Shades was able to produce was the fact that he would ultimately get very involved in the waste hauling business. And this would be confirmed in different interviews. Little Al Diarco would talk about this in some of his testimony, the Lucchese boss. It was very well known that he, Ali Shades, and Gambino heavyweight Jimmy Brown Failure, a guy we've done a show on, were basically the purveyors of a cartel, if you will, that ran the trash hauling business in New York. And, you know, basically the 200,000 customers that used private sanitation were kicking up to the mob. They were basically overseeing all these different trash hauling companies. You know, if you weren't getting down with what they wanted, they were firebombing your trucks, things of that nature. And what would ultimately happen would be, you know, Malangone would put a monopoly on the trash industry. Basically, if you did any involvement in trash, you were going to deal with the mafia. It was pretty simple. And what different law enforcement did is they basically realized that in 1992, a company in Brooklyn, Chambers Paper Fibers Company, would complain to prosecutors and to city officials that one of their trucks had been firebombed and that their employees had been assaulted and threatened after the company tried to enter the trash hauling business. So what happened is the police department gets this officer and a detective called Richard Cowan to work undercover. And he would be the manager of this company. And he would get all these recorded conversations between not only Ali Shades, but other members of the mafia that were, you know, basically forcing people to do things for a monopoly on the trash industry. And look, we're not talking about, a few million dollars. We're talking about $300-500 million a year. Mm-hmm. Residential and city-owned buildings whose garbage was used by the sanitation department were unaffected. But all the different private companies that were working all were basically ran by the mob.
Yeah, it's the contracts, right? I mean, this doesn't affect the guy who puts his trash out on Tuesday night and gets it picked up Wednesday morning. It affects the companies that have those city contracts that need to keep them because it's a massive part of their income and now have to cut guys like this in. I mean, that's where the juice comes from.
Yeah. And you think about, you know, and this is, again, just one part of the way the Genovese family made money. I mean, let's just think back to the 80s and 90s of the Genovese at its highest level. You had this operation, which was making hundreds of millions of dollars a year from one guy. You had all of Ali Shade's other businesses, his nightclub, his gambling, his loan sharking, all that stuff. You had the Windows case in which the mafia was making a dollar or two on every window installed in hundreds of housing.
I mean, the Windows is unreal. I mean, when you can't even count that money. Like, that's not even real money.
Right.
It's absurd.
Let's also throw in the numbers operations, the unions. I mean, literally all the big buildings in New York, whether it was Trump Tower, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Javits Center, all these places, they were all run by the mafia. And this is just one family during one time period. It's just stupid amounts of money. It's money that can't even be properly understood. And this was one of those parts that we, again, don't talk about a ton because, you know, it's trash. But these mob bosses were setting prices and preventing any competition. They were the only competition in these places. Now, according to the government, Jimmy Brown was very involved. Ali Shades was involved. Another individual, James Francolino, he was a soldier in the Gambino craft. Like, he actually worked directly under Jimmy Brown. They were all the chieftains in this carding scheme. It's really vast, the amount of money that these people were making. And as one of those questions earlier mentioned, that book Takeover by Rick Cowan is a very good book about this whole orchestration and what they were doing. But there were other things Ali Shades was doing as well, including being a under-the-radar motherfucker who was going behind the back of the family. According to Alan Longo, now Longo, they called him Baldy Longo. He was the driver, one of the main guys in the crew of Ali Shades. Ali Shades is a capo, had his own crew. He talked openly on many different wiretaps with guys that would turn informant. Longo would talk about that pretty much for as long as Gotti was boss, the 5 or 6 years. Anytime business would come up between Chin and Gotti, Gotti was completely running to Ali Shades and telling him about it. And they were talking subversive about Chin. As I said, Ali Shades was always up John's ass, according to Baldy Longo. Longo would also claim on tape that in 1988, Gotti would go behind the back of Chin and basically tell Ali Shades that, hey, let's see if we can get the other bosses to a zero in and we'll kill Chin and you can be the new boss. And that was actually at one point floated. And Gotti said, I want you to be my guy. And this was Gotti's ultimate plan to kind of be the guy, the big time boss of everyone.
Consolidate power, right? You take out Gigante, you install a guy who's loyal to you, you consolidate power. Now you control 40% of these families.
Right. And this was always John Gotti's idea. I mean, if you look into New Jersey, I mean, he did very similar things with the Cavalcanti crime family. He wanted to have his certain guys, whether it was John D'Amato or whoever. And he wanted to soullessly take over everyone. And he knew that if he could get Chin Gigante out of the way, well, Anthony Casso, you know, he could probably control a little bit. And, you know, Chin was the main thoroughfare. He was the real power, right? Him and Tony Salerno. So the goal was, hey, Salerno's locked up. Let's kill Chin. You'll be our new boss. Ultimately, it never went through because of Anthony Casso. Casso would not agree that this was the right move. And it ultimately never went down. But that was uncovered in certain conversations that Baldy Longo had with a guy called Michael D'Urso, Cookie D'Urso, they called him. He would turn informant, and he played all sorts of very interesting tapes involving Baldy Longo, who was very interested in talking. I mean, Alan Longo also made some very interesting comments about just the overall, place of where the Genovese crime family was. At one point, he would say that in a tape conversation about the family, quote, "Don't let anyone tell you we're dead. We're not. Vito Genovese ain't here no more. Vincent Gigante is. We're here." And he would also compare that no other crew or family was anywhere near where they were at the time, other than maybe Joe's family, which would call into question Joe Messina. He at that point believed that in the early 2000s, the only two families that were worth anything, according to Longo, were the Bonanno family and the Genovese, which they were. We have to remember the Gambino family was a mess with, you know, Peter Gotti and John Jr. The Casey's were always all over the place with Anthony Casso. The Columbos were always a fucking mess. These two were the most powerful families. And Longo was very, honest in saying that. Now, Longo was also kicking up to his rabbi, Ali Shades. Longo was very involved with pump and dump stock schemes, which is something that we didn't talk much about. We talked a couple weeks ago about that with Sal Romano. That was something Black Chick in the 90s and 2000s that was very big. The mob was making tons of money on stock scams and boiler rooms and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you've got to give the mob credit over the large part of the 20th century for being adaptable, if nothing else, right? I mean, you're absolutely right with these stock schemes. I mean, And we've all seen the movies, right? I mean, we've seen The Boiler Rooms, The Wolf of Wall Street, that you got a pretty good idea what it is. You take a garbage stock, you inflate it by selling it to people, and then you get the hell out of it and you make a killing because, you're not trading in Disney. And yeah, I mean, they were heavily involved in this stuff in the 90s, and it again made a fortune.
But with trash, and ultimately the ultimate problems for Malangone and all these other people was Rick Cowan was building a case against all these guys. At one point in 1994, during the heyday of the investigation, in a conversation with James Francolino, the undercover detective was told by Francolino, quote, "I'm the boss. I'm directing traffic here. I'm the guy you come to." Malangone would also tell Cowan in a conversation, quote, "I run garbage in Brooklyn." So, again, these are problems. These are evidence that you cannot cross-examine a tape. The FBI and NYPD would also tail Francolino and Malangone, meeting separately in 1989 and 1990 in Little Italy with John Gotti and Sammy the Bull Gravano. So there was a lot of hurtful stuff here. And this is ultimately in 1995 what would bring Ali Shades down. In 1995, he would be indicted by the feds in basically this overseeing the waste carting industry. I mean, sit with all sorts of racketeering charges. He would ultimately choose to take his case to court, which was a bad idea. In 1997, Ali Shades would get 15 years in federal prison for his role in basically scamming New York City out of garbage for the last 6, 7 years. The thing for Ali Shades, though, was he made tons of money. And no, there's a question of how much of it he still has. I'm going to guess Ali Shades, who is still alive, he's 85 years old. He was released in 2010. He's likely retired at this point, but we can guarantee that Ali Shades made a lot of fucking money in his life and is living fine. He's dumb enough. He's not dumb enough to still be involved in this whole thing. There was a lot that could be said about Ali Shades. Look, not only did he make tons of money, but people have talked he was a very nice guy. I mean, there was never really anything too bad said about him. He did his time really in relative anonymity. He did his thing and got out, and that was that. But he was a guy that, when we look back at how we talk about the Genovese family and how amazingly powerful and rich they were, it was because of people like him.
Yeah, and I mean, like you hit the nail on the head. Like I couldn't find anything about him, being a particularly violent man, because that's not, we talked about at the beginning of the episode, that's not how he came into this world, right? He didn't have to quote unquote make his bones on the street. He was more interested in earning and being profitable at every turn, and he was as good as anybody at him. Look at the things he did between the stock schemes, the garbage rackets, running the nightclubs. I mean, the guy had a full portfolio. So I have no doubt that wherever Ali Malangone is, he's not poor.
Yeah, and I've actually debunked a very bizarre story that relates to Ali Shades, and this is something that look, I'm not gonna say I caught rats for things they say, but I kind of do,
Yeah, you do.
yeah, and I was actually told by I was actually called by this individual directly, and he basically told me that due to my video, he quote said that he said it was the wrong Ali Shades. Basically, what I'm talking about here is, there's a guy called Gene Borello who used to be a Bonanno associate. He was involved with Vinny Asaro. You know who Gene Borello is.
Yep.
He had a YouTube channel with John Aylett at one point, and he put out this ridiculous story that at one point in the mid-90s, early 2000s, he robbed Ali Shades outside of his house. Supposedly pistol-whipped him and stole money from him. And any normal person would just look at the fact and say, well, that's not possible because Gene Borello was born in 1984. Okay. Ali Shades was arrested in 1995. Okay. So at the time of his arrest, Gene Borello would have been 11 years old. Okay. At the time of his incarceration, he would have been, 13, 14. And he didn't get out until 2010. So how the hell would Gene Borello have robbed him at any point, unless he was 11 years old or 9 or 10 years old when he did it? It didn't make any sense. And Gene Borello would tell me that supposedly he got the wrong Ali Shades and it actually wasn't Ali Shades. But
In the end, I proved him wrong.
I mean, listen, that's what you're here for, right?
Yes.
You're here to put facts out into the world, brother.
So, yes, to make that clear, Gene Brella did not rob Ali Shades. That never happened. That video should be taken down. It never happened. And, again, maybe he robbed someone called Ali Shades, but it wasn't Ali Shades, the one we're talking about here. The truth is Gene Brella would not rob Ali Shades. Ali Shades was very powerful and very tough, and it would never happen. So there you go. Ali Shades Malangone, our final episode here. A short biography, but someone that I think is important that we talk about just a little bit. Some of these people aren't as in-depth maybe as others, but Ali made a lot of money in a pretty short period of time, you know, maybe over 20 years or so, and is living comfortably. As I said, still alive, 85 years old. He'd be a guy to want to talk to.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is a good one.
So if you're out there, Ali Shades, I'd love to speak to you. I won't be waiting, though, for his call anytime soon. But that's that, guys. Blackjack, I will say it was great hearing from you. I'm sure in the new season of the show, I'm sure you'll be back at some point and we'll talk about something crazy. I want to it's kind of bittersweet for me, man. I've never had a week off of this show. This is like, I think, 72.
I know. We always used to talk about taking a couple of weeks off, and then 5 days later, Jeff would be like, you want to do an episode?
I guess I just felt bad. I was trying to build the show, and I didn't want to. I think the biggest problem content creators have sometimes is they are quick to give up, and they don't want to build something. And, you know, I felt like I wanted to build something, and I did, and we have, and I'm happy that we've been able to do it. I promise you guys that we're doing this for certain reasons, and you'll know very soon. And when we come back, the show will be better and bigger and more awesome. So Stick with us. If you haven't listened to one episode, make sure you go check it out. Like I said, we'll probably be back maybe October 1st, something like that. I don't know. I don't quote me on that. It might be later. I don't know. But we'll be back at some point. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at the Sitdown7 for updates. I'll still post stuff on YouTube and Twitter. I'll post that stuff. Still keep abreast with you. If you ever have a question, you can reach out to me on DM or email me. Blackjack, it was good to hear from you. I'm glad everything's going well for you, and I'm sure we'll speak to you in the next season.
Definitely, brother. I appreciate you having me back tonight.
Yeah, good talking to you. Go follow Blackjack on Twitter. Blackjack, what's your Twitter?
At Blackjack Fletch.
At Blackjack Fletch. Go check him out. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. I appreciate all of you. I thank you for being here for 70-plus straight weeks. We'll be back very soon on the sit-down. Until then, I wish you a good day, and we'll talk to you again real soon. We'll see you next time here on the Sit Down.